verse 29.
Alright, just quickly, yesterday, you know, the thing between Magid and the fact that we use the word Lesaper, I spoke about it with Rabbi Lofer today, and he's saying that Lesaper, like, comes from the word Sipur, it's like a story. And then Magid, like, has a connotation of, like a novelty. And, like, he was saying that, that we see the bit with when Rabbi Eliezer, Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva, like, before, when they're all discussing, it uses the word Lesaper again. And he's saying, because they knew everything to be known for, like the Seder. And so saying that even if, like, because they weren't like bringing anything, any novelty to the whole, to like the Passover, like the Seder, the story. So saying even though there's no Chiddush, you still have to like just say the story, even though you can't keep all that. I don't know if I really expressed it.
Okay, that's very interesting. I also said that Safir would have to understand. I told you it's the Safir third. I mean, it's meant to identify with, but we'll have to talk about that. I agree. You know, a situation can be questioned in a number of different ways. One question is, what is the difference between the words? What is the difference between the concepts that they express? Another question is, given that they are different, to express different ideas, how come it didn't follow the expression in the Torah? Why did the Haggadah substitute a different expression? I must say, that's what bothers me. What bothers me is the shift. That there is a shift, and describing shifts is important. We have to do that. And I'm prepared to do that. But it just never occurred to me that I have to answer why Haggadah didn't use the biblical and build its understanding on that. Rather than going to a different one, which has a different understanding. Maybe I could press the button. Is it open the windows? The air is dead. It's not that hot outside. We don't need air conditioning. Okay. Okay. Okay, we're up to the four sons. Now, this is probably the best known part of Haggadah, and as you'll see, it's one of the least understood. I'm using now a commentary of Eliyahu Kitov, who wrote a commentary on Haggadah. And most of what I'm going to tell you comes from him. A couple of things that I put in myself. But let's look at this and see if we can at least start with what's difficult is, what needs a special explanation. First of all, there are four of them. The wise son, the wicked son, the simple son, and the son is unable to ask. Any particular reason why those four are chosen? Are they related to one another in some particular way? Do they clearly cover everybody? What's the claim to fame of these four? One question. Another question, which many commentators ask, the wicked son, we cite a verse replying to him. Verse Exodus 13:8, see? Because of the Hashem did bring him out of Egypt. Now, the son is unable to ask, we cite exactly the same verse. Is that supposed to imply that there's some relationship between the two of them? Thirdly, this question Kitov asks, and when I read it, I wanted to shrivel up and die. And not having thought of it myself, it's so obvious. The simple son says, Mazos, what is this? What is this? How old do you think he is? Looking around and says, what's that? How old could he be? You know, if he's six, he'll certainly remember from last year. He's five, he's four, he's a Jewish kid, right? He's three, he'll remember from last year. How old can this kid be who could just say Mazos? My two-year-old grandchildren can speak volumes and can speak whole paragraphs. He's got to be a very young kid, right? Let's say he's two. The third son, who's simple, is 2 years old. Okay, then the fourth son? The one that doesn't have an ass? How old is he? 18 months? In diapers? And you're going to say to him, it's because of this that Hashem did to you when I'm out of Egypt? Isn't something wrong here? Something peculiar is going on here. It simply can't mean, when he says unable to ask, it can't mean the child is so young he hasn't mastered elementary language yet. Because if he were that young, he wouldn't understand it when he said, for the sake of this God did for me when I was in Egypt. So what are we talking about? We don't know what we're talking about. Okay. Now, let's take a look a little bit at the wise and the wicked, and then I'll tell you what Kitov says, and then we'll deepen our understanding. Terrific. The wise man, what does he say? What are the testimonies, decrees, and ordinances? We'll talk about what those three categories are, which Hashem our God has commanded you. Therefore explain to him the laws of the Passover offering, that one may not eat dessert after the final taste of the Passover offering. The wicked son, what does he say? Of what purpose is this work to you? Now watch carefully. He says to you, thereby excluding himself. By excluding himself from the community of believers, he denies the basic principle of Judaism. At this point, are you a little bit upset? A little bit disturbed?
The wise son says this to you.
Oh, the wise son also says to you. Glance up 8 lines or so. The wise son says, what are the testimonies, decrees, and ordinances that Hashem our God has commanded you? We're throwing a brick at the wicked son. Ha! You say you? You're excluding yourself? You know, that's terrible. Why don't we throw a brick at the wise son? Has commanded you. Now look again at what the wise son says and show me why there's no compassion here. The wise son starts by saying our God. You can't say he's excluding himself. It'd be absurd. He says our God. Okay, if he said our God including himself, why then does he say commanded you? Now here's a simple way out. Correct. How old is he? He's a kid. He's 11. You can't say he was commanded. Commandments are only for adults. Right? So there's nothing wrong with what the wise son says. The wicked son says, what is this service to you? So then, he's excluding himself. There's a lot more to say, but I'm just doing things in a certain order. Okay, therefore, blunt his teeth and say to him. Now, watch carefully. Read carefully and literally. Something is terrifically out of joint in what's coming up now. Therefore say to him, it is because of this that Hashem did so for me when I went out of Egypt. For me, but not for him. Had he been there, he would not have been redeemed. Listen again. Therefore blunt his teeth and say to him. Say to him. It is because of this that Hashem did so for me when I went out of Egypt. For me, but not for him. Had he been there, he would not have been redeemed. What's out of joint here?
Not for you.
Right, I'm not talking to him. If I'm talking to him, I have to say, not for you. You know, had you been there, you would not have been redeemed. What do you mean he? I'm not talking to him. If I say he, I'm talking about him. I'm not talking to him. The English sort of skips away from it, tell him. But the Hebrew is there more low. Say to him. And you're not saying to him. There's something funny going on here, right? Okay, now, I have something to teach you, which you may not know. L'emor le can mean to say about, not only to say to. There are even biblical usages. God says to Moses, the Jews will leave. And as the Jews leave, Pharaoh will realize that he's done himself a bad deal. The Omar, the Bnei Yisrael. And Pharaoh will say about the Jewish people, they're confused in the wilderness, and they're closed up, and we'll go out and get them back. That's after they've left. So when it says, the Omar, the Bnei Yisrael, Pharaoh will say, Leh, the children of Israel, the Leh means about, not to. Well, one thing's for sure, we're not talking to him. The picture is like this. He poses a question or a challenge, as we'll see, and we turn away from him and talk to each other, pointing at him over there. See that guy over there? To whom we're not talking? That guy over there, had he been in Egypt, he wouldn't have been redeemed. Nope, that requires some explanation. How come we're not talking to him? As we said, how come when we talk to the fourth one, the one that we're able to ask, we use the same verse, but we do talk to him? And even if he doesn't open up a conversation, it says the fourth one, we should open up the conversation with him, but use the same verse that we use with respect to the wicked son. So this is what Eliyahu Kitov says. There are two verses in the book of Proverbs. One verse says, Al kan ksil ki ivalto pen tishvelo gam ato. Don't answer the crooked fool according to his wickedness, lest you become equal to him. Don't answer the crooked fool, lest you become equal to him. That's what one verse says. Back to back, the next verse, the previous verse, I think the way it goes, says, Anei ksil ki ivalto pen yiyeh chacham be'enav. Answer the crooked fool according to his wickedness, lest he be wise in his own eyes. It is an open, literal, exact contradiction. One says, don't answer the wicked fool, and the other says, do answer the wicked fool, with exactly the same vocabulary. Al tan ksiu pi valto, anei ksiu pi valto. Mamish, word for word.
How can you say, how can you call the Rasha the wicked one, if we're saying here the ages are, they're all below bar mitzvah, and his actions, his father is responsible for
it? That's a nice question. I think you're uncovering a natural assumption, but an assumption may not be correct. And that is that the close in decreasing order. But it may not be so. Also, the Ben Sarimura, if I remember correctly, how old is the Ben Sarimura?
13 to 13 and a half,
right, yeah. But, yeah. So then, he's an adult. I think you're right. Either that, or you can identify the wickedness of a Okay, I'll just give you a little hint. The Gemara, when it talks about the actions of a minor, says, "Katan Rachmana Patre." God relieved him, and there's a fundamental machlokes rishonim whether it means he relieved him of punishment or relieve him of responsibility. And there are those Rishonim who say he is responsible, the mitzvahs do apply to him, not in the same degree as the devil, but they do apply, and just relieve the punishment. And indeed, you have to tell him to relieve the punishment, because the mitzvahs do apply, and you would have thought maybe he should be punished, he's totally not being punished. So, and as far as punishment by God is concerned, most sources say you're not subject to punishment by God until you're 20, even though you are an adult. So, it's not as straightforward and easy a picture as it might seem. At any rate, this is what Kitov says. So you have a contradiction. One says answer the fool, the other says don't answer the fool. Says Kitov, following the famous rule, when you have a contradiction, make a distinction, which is something worth thinking about. When you have a contradiction, make a distinction. There are two types of fool. There is a fool who believes he knows everything. He thinks that his understanding is perfect. He's got it all worked out. In his mind, it's all set. The truth is clear as a bell. Therefore, when you talk to him, he's not listening. He's just waiting for you to stop so he gets the next chance to talk. But he's not listening. Says King Solomon in the book of Proverbs, don't have a conversation with such a fool, because you'll never make any progress. And therefore, you will, in the end, appear just as foolish as he. And this, by the way, is very typical of Christian missionaries. And all the more so of Jews who have fallen into that kind of cult-like experience. We had two boys who came in here, this is like a long time. Some Jewish boys who had fallen into that cult. And one says to me, when I read the New Testament, I'm thrilled and inspired, and, you know. So I said to him, can't you imagine that there's a Hindu who feels the same way when he reads his scriptures? He said back to me, look, Rabbi, you and I both agree that Hinduism isn't right, so let's not bring that in. Oh. Then he says to me, Christians are given a special organ with which they perceive the truth of the New Testament. Oh, I said. And how do you know that the Christians are given a special organ with which they perceive the truth of the New Testament? And he said, it's written in the New Testament. Oh, I said, that does sound like a very narrow circle, doesn't it? It took me a half hour to get him to see he was talking in a circle, and when he finally saw it, he didn't care. It didn't bother him. So, you know, these are people who are, they have one button and a send button. They don't have a receive button. They're just talking. Good. Don't waste your time with them. Right? That's one type of fool. The second type, says Hito, is a person who is convinced of foolish opinions, but is aware that his grasp of the subject is not 100% clear, not 100% solid. There are certain doubts that he's still subject to. He's just convinced in the meantime. But he's prepared to hear. He's prepared to listen. Then, says King Solomon, answer him. Because if you don't answer him, after a while, he'll say, I've held on to these opinions for 20 years. And no one has ever showed me anything wrong with them. I guess they're right. So, such a fool, you must answer, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Lest he come to think that he is wise, because nobody ever contradicted what he holds. Now, says Kito, the wicked son in the Haggadah is the first kind of fool. And number four, the one who doesn't know how to ask, is the second type of fool. They're both fools, and they both belong on the same side of the fence. Only the wicked son is positive he's right, clear in his mind, there's no doubt whatsoever. And therefore, if you talk to him, he's not listening. And the Haggadah is telling you, don't talk to people who aren't willing to engage in a real dialogue. Don't waste your time. Therefore, when he poses his challenge, we don't answer to him. We turn to each other and express the appropriate attitude, the appropriate evaluation, I should say, of him. But we don't speak to him at all. Now, pay attention. He's at the Seder. We didn't slam the door in his face. We didn't throw him out. We didn't exclude him. We're just not willing to dialogue him. Because it won't be a dialogue. There's no give and take. So our hand is out to him to remain part of us, to remain in contact with us. But he's got to admit that there's a possibility that he's wrong and engage in meaningful dialogue. Otherwise, we're not going to talk to him. We'll have to understand exactly what his challenge is. I'll come back to it. Whereas the son is unable to ask, the Haggadah goes even farther than King Solomon. King Solomon says, answer him. The Haggadah says, even open up. Open up the conversation with him. Because if you lead him to his own mistaken ideas, eventually he will come to think that he's right on the grounds that no one ever challenged him. And this is what it means when it says he doesn't know how to ask. What it means is that he doesn't know how to ask the way the wicked son asks. The wicked son asks with what sounds like intelligence, what sounds like, you know, so ironical and knows how to be sarcastic and poke fun, and the one who doesn't know how to ask wishes that he had that cleverness to be able to make the rabbi squirm like that. And that's the sense in which he is a budding Russia. He's a budding wicked, but he's just budding. He hasn't flowered yet. He hasn't matured yet. Let me just finish the description and we'll get into it all. That's the second and fourth. Now, we asked, how are the four chosen? How are they related to one another? In particular, wise and wicked, they don't sound like opposites of one another. They don't sound like they're related in any particular way. Watch, I'll show you how they are related. They're related beautifully. Up to here is with Kito, the following, this final idea is mine. Wise. What does it mean to be wise? Our sources have a very surprising description of wisdom. In the chapters of the fathers, it says, Ezu Chacham, Halomei, Yitro Adam. I got a few phrases. Who is wise? Someone who learns from every person. Gosh, is that what you thought wisdom meant? I thought wisdom meant he knows it all. He knows it well. He's deep. You know, he has a good explanation for things. He's really got it. Ricky Obis is something entirely different. Who's wise? The one who learns from everyone. When it says that the workers who put together the Mishkan, the tabernacle, God filled them with wisdom, Rashi says, wisdom, chokhma, means what you learned from your teacher. Not what you have on your own, but what you learned from your teacher. What's the detail? What's going on here? What's the concept? Now let's think. Person who learns from everyone. What is his picture of himself? How does a person who learns from everyone feel about himself? Number one, he says, I'm missing a lot. I'm missing a lot. If I thought I had everything, I wouldn't be looking to learn from anybody. No, he learns from everybody. So he says, I'm a big black hole. You know, I'm just empty inside. Okay, yeah, I know black holes suck things in, but they also destroy all the structure. Right? I'm a big black hole. I'm empty inside. I've got to fill it up with something. And every person in this world has something from which I could learn. Why? Because one of God's main revelations in the world is through the human soul. The human soul is a chelek elokam imah, the piece of God on high. And every person is put into this world to do something special that no one else can do. So there's something in your soul which only you can do. It's a unique quality. And the fact that the other person is younger and less well educated and less intelligent and has a less inclusive experience. So you might say, what can I learn from him? It's not true. Because there's something in his soul, some godliness in his soul that isn't anywhere else, and from that, everyone else can learn. So this wise person is the picture of, now can you pick one word that characterizes the wise person, and the opposite word characterizes the wicked one?
You can wait and believe.
Okay, and in terms of attitude?
Happy, sad.
Open-minded, closed-minded?
Open and closed. That. The wise one is open. He's open. And the wicked one is closed. They are really opposites. I think this is astonishing. From looking like four helter-skelter categories, if you analyze it in Jewish terms, with Kito's analysis on the one hand, and what Chazal say about wisdom on the other hand, it comes out that in their essence, they're really opposites. Now, the one who doesn't have to ask is a budding Russia, a budding wicked son. The simple son is a budding wise son. He's asking. He's asking to the extent of his ability. He asks, what is this? He's open. It's just that his openness is not very sophisticated, not very far-reaching, because he has a lot more resources. So really, the Haggadah is telling you that there are two basic categories. Not that there aren't other things to say about people and about children, about attitudes and education, but there are two basic categories, the open and the closed, and you have to deal with them in those terms. Deal with them in the extent to which they're open and closed. I think this is a really a gorgeous analysis. Yeah.
How can you compare the Sheno Yodea Lishol to the Rasha, if we also again in the ages thing, he's like what we said, 18 months or below?
No, I rejected that. I said that's absurd. He can't say he's 18 months because if he did, the answer wouldn't be understood by him. He's got to be older than that. So when it says Sheno Yodea Lishol, by the way, the phraseology and Chazal, every word is absolute gold. And sometimes it'll take you decades to figure out why they use this word rather than that word. Doesn't She'ena Yochel Lishol? It's She'ena Yodea Lishol. He's lacking knowledge and insight to ask. Not that he doesn't have command of language. Not that he can't speak. No, he hasn't got the knowledge to ask. That means that, you know, and he realizes that. I don't have the knowledge to ask, but I want to ask. So it fits much better with an older child. One who has a goal and he just can't establish it because he hasn't got the knowledge to ask better. So, so it breaks up into these two categories. You with me?
Can you connect the last two again to open and close?
Yeah. The She'en Yedei Lishol, Kitov says, means a son who wants to ask like a wicked one. So he's the other type of fool, said Kitov. Just that he's not 100% sure he's right. So he's not yet completely closed. He's on the closed side of the divide. He's more closed than open. He's hoping someday to become so smart and so sophisticated that he can be completely closed like the wicked one, but he's not yet completely closed. Right? The simple son is one who's basically open. It's just that his openness is shallow because he doesn't have the knowledge and sophistication to ask. As we'll see, the wise son lay out all the categories and the distinctions. So the simple son is on the open side, and the one that asks is on the closed side. He's not 100% closed, but he's largely closed, and he's hoping to become 100% closed. And our job is to try to prevent him. All right? Okay, now let's look again at the wicked son. Ma ha'avada hazos lochem. The Hebrew here, the English here, I think, does capture the concept. What is this work for you? Do you hear in his question a fundamentally wrong idea?
Work?
No, and now they're not much less, right?
For you.
It's a holiday of like unity, and he's like speaking, not including himself.
That's true about the you, but I'm asking something else now. The question is, his question is, what is this purpose of this work for you? His picture is, what does it do for you? These mitzvot that you're performing, what does it do for you? You know, you hear a question like that, you ought to reject the question. You're not asking the right question. My picture of the Torah is not that it's a useful tool to do things for me. My picture of the Torah is that it defines what's important to be done, and I hope to redeem my life by doing something for it. It's not that I am the goal and it's to serve me. That's totally upside down. His question shows that he has an upside down orientation. What is this service for you? What does it do to you, for you? He could have asked, what is the point of this service? Not about it for you. He could have asked, what is the significance of this service? He could have asked, what is the value of this service? He doesn't ask that. He asks, what is it for you? What is it to you? Making you and your goals and your projects the standard by which it has to be judged. That's totally upside down. Okay? That's another indication of the fact that he's coming from the wrong position. Now let's go back to the wise son. What are the testimonies, decrees, and ordinances? That's not too bad in English, actually. Eidos comes from the word eid, which is a witness. What could it mean to call a mitzvah a testimony? Do you have any idea? Obviously, he's dividing the mitzvahs into categories. What kind of category is a testimony? What kind of a mitzvah is a testimony? why would it be testimony?
Testimony to God taking us out of Egypt.
Okay, so now, good, so then you give an example. Now give a definition. What does it mean to chok? No, the chok is the next category. Talk about eros now. What does it mean to call it a testimony? To identify it, but what are you saying about it when you say it's a testimony?
Using that logic, I would use the definition that it's a strong reminder.
Okay.
Good reason?
Yes, you're both correct, and you're getting closer to the definition. That's pretty close. A testimony is something which is symbolic, which expresses something, expresses an idea, a fact. Therefore, it can serve as a reminder. What does an aid do? An aid testifies. Call that law a testimony, it means it testifies to something. So, the holidays are all testimonies, because they testify to certain historical events. Shabbos, all holidays. And especially symbolic mitzvahs. You know, you see somebody with leather boxes wrapped around his body with leather straps. It don't mean nothing unless you read what it's telling you. It's not like giving charity. Giving charity is not testimony. Giving charity is helping somebody in need. Right? It's not symbolic. Might be symbolic in addition, but you wouldn't know that because somebody told you. Whereas the black boxes are surely symbolic. If they aren't symbolic, they're not doing anything. So testimonies are mitzvot that are symbolic expressions of some idea. Good. Chukim usually are understood as mitzvot that have no reason. According to most Rishonim, that's incorrect. Every mitzvah has a reason. So a chok means a mitzvah whose reason we don't know. Or most of us don't know. Or won't be known until the times of the Messiah. But all of it's supposed to have reasons, so says the Rambam, so says the Ramban, and other major authorities. But relatively speaking, they're the ones for which we don't possess reasons, let's say. Mishpatim? A mishpat is something which has enough rationale, now notice the word enough rationale on the basis of its own logic to see that it should be done. I didn't say that's why it's done, I didn't say that's the whole rationale. There is enough rationale on the basis of logic to see that it should be done. Don't steal, don't murder, give charity, pursue justice, you know. So and so. The first thing that the Chacham says is, I know there are different types of commands, and I want it all. Now, each of these commandments has a different kind of relationship. And you can easily imagine the kind of person for whom each type of commandment is most natural, but the others aren't quite so natural. Eidos are natural for people who want an ethnic identity. They want to belong to a group. They want to share the history of the group. They want to share in the culture of the group. So, puts on tefillin, he wears tzitzis, and he wears a yarmulke, and he eats matzahs and Pesach, and he blows a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. He's a Jew! And all these things have J-E-W labeled on them because no one else would ever do them unless he was a Jew, and they symbolize elements of Judaism to him. Chukim are naturally appropriate for people who want to attach themselves to God in an unreserved way. I follow you because you are the creator, and I don't require anything of my own. I don't require any understanding or identification on my side. I want to attach myself to something higher. Mishpatim are for people, that are easy, natural, for people who can analyze and appreciate the logic in things. And when they have the logic, that attracts them. Yes, I like things that are logical, things that I can explain and defend. The Chacham says, I'm not limited. I want Eidos, I want to be able to participate in the symbols of Judaism, and I want Chukim, because I want to attach myself to God in an unlimited manner, and I want Mishpatim, because I do want to understand, and understanding does mean something to me. I want them all, because all of these are parts of my religious life, parts of my relationship to God, because Hashem, our God, commanded them, all of them, and therefore I want to be part of all of them. That's what the Chacham said, yeah.
Is there a the person who would be attached to the chukim wouldn't be the highest level, because by being attached to chukim, that's including everything else, because he's going to do everything because he wants to serve God, and he wants to be attached to the higher God, since God commanded all these commandments. It's all inclusive, while others won't be all inclusive.
I think that's right. I would just modify your statement slightly by saying that is one aspect in which he is superior. I wouldn't say that he's superior to the court, because as long as he maintains that attitude, there's a certain sense in which he's not serving God with his mind. His mind is not online. And that means part of him is left out. Whereas the person who understands, uses his mind to the greatest extent to understand and then performs, his mind is also serving God. So comparisons are usually limited. They're like one dimensional, and there are many dimensions to consider. They're not overall comparisons. But I think you're right. Your observation is correct. Okay? Now, what do you answer him? Goodness gracious. Eidos, Chukim, Mishpatim. That's what he asks for. You tell him, no dessert after the Paschal Sacrifice. No dessert. And it's quite interesting. In Hebrew it says, Ba'af atal mero. Af means even. What's the even over here? So, I told you at the outset, there's an infinity of commentaries. Right? But I tell you that the commentaries say two things. I don't mean that's all they say. But there are two things that are said here. First of all, this idea of not having a dessert after Paschal sacrifice, so the taste will remain in your mouth, is a rabbinic refinement. It's a rabbinic refinement. It's not a biblical commandment at all. So one thing we are responding to the Chacham is, we trust you. We trust you that even the least serious, the least stringent, the least fundamental of the laws is something you'll be interested in, you'll want to know about, and you'll appreciate it. And it's something for which a person with a less serious mind would find very difficult to take seriously. You're going to finish the Seder now, if you are good members of the Yeshiva, you're going to finish by midnight. If you are those lax, sloppy Hasidim, among whom I count myself, and I don't agree with the lax and sloppy, it says that's a joke thing. You have till morning, after you have to finish by Chatos, by midnight. But goodness gracious, there'll be 3 or 4 hours after you finish. You can't eat anything? My men don't drink anything but water, so you need water. To enable the taste to last in your mouth, that's important. That's worthy of consideration. That's worthy of significance. And here you have an application of a very fundamental Jewish attitude, which is that the physical world, the purpose of the physical world is to express spiritual ideas, spiritual facts, spiritual realities, and the Passover Seder is not just for itself. The Passover Seder comes once a year, and it's supposed to have an impact on the rest of the year. You're supposed to be elevated into a person who's not the same after the Seder as you were before, as we're seeing. So that being the case, this idea, when you don't eat a drink, then you think to yourself, why am I not having another piece of cake? Why am I not, because the taste is supposed to remain in my mouth. And then you sort of re-experience the taste, and then you think, what's the importance of the taste is remaining in my mouth? Because the Seder is not something I just did, and it'll come in 364 days, approximately. But it's something which had an impact on me. I was to take what it did for me and use it as a platform for making progress in the future. Okay? That's the... Oh. Now, I want to link up what's said here with what's said above. We said there were 4 introductions. The first one is Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenatzan, He said Baruch HaMakom means the one who gives the ground of possibility to everything else. One of the existence of everything possible. There's a pre-tzadik here that is extremely important. What's going to be with this wicked son? What's going to happen to him? What kind of future could he have? The pre-tzadik says, every Jew will make it. No Jew will be lost. No Jew will be annihilated. No Jew will be lost entirely. There isn't such thing. Every Jew will eventually make it. Maybe it will require reincarnations, but every Jew will make it. You have read, some of you, the beginning of the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin. The Mishnah there, it says, these are the people who have lost their share in the world to come. Some of them are Jews. That sounds like some people get lost. Well, further on in the Gemara, it says that there's a group of people called Dorshei Rishumos, interpreters of hints and impressions. I'll explain that in a minute, Hashem, who say no. They're all going to make it to Olam Haba. They disagree with the Mishnah. They're also Tanoim, and they say the Mishnah is wrong. And the Pre-Tzadik and also the Ben Yehoyada say that the Dorshei Rishumos in the Gemara, their view is the one that's accepted, and the view in the Mishnah is not accepted. By the way, in case you're not aware of this, the Mishnah is not the final word. The sages of the Talmud are free to reject the Mishnah. And the number of cases the Pesach comes out against the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not binding. Okay, now the Pre-Tzadik says this partly on the basis of a Rashi. The verse says, you shall tell your son on that day, saying, it's because of this that Hashem acted on my behalf when I ran out of Egypt. One of the places where God says to Moses, tell the Jewish people that they'll go to the land of Israel, and when they get there, their children ask them, why are they keeping this service on this month? You should tell them, explain it to them. And the verse ends with the word that the people bowed and prostrated themselves to Hashem. So Rashi says, they bowed and prostrated themselves because of the great good news that they heard. So the Pre-Tzadik asks, what great good news did they hear? Did they hear that they're going to have children? Every nation has children. That verse is talking, in fact, about the wicked son. Did they hear that they're going to have wicked children? That's the good news that they prostrated themselves for? What is there in the fact of the sons that would make them feel that it's good news? Says the Pre-Tzadik, the good news is that you may have sons who will turn out to be wicked, like one of the sons, but they're not going to be lost. They're not going to be lost. They're going to be saved. If so, what do we mean in the Haggadah when we say to this wicked son, had you been in Egypt, you wouldn't have been saved? What are we talking about? Says the Pre-Tzadik, that's before the Torah was given. Before the Torah was given, someone could be lost. But after the Torah has been given, no one could be lost. And that's the idea of starting with Baruch HaMakom. God is the ground of existence of everyone, including the wicked. And that's why I told you that the wicked son is after Seder. We can only exclude him from the Seder. We just don't dialogue it, because there's no point in dialogue when the person is not listening, not willing to sort of take your point seriously. But we don't exclude him. Of course, God had to exclude him. By the way, a number of years ago, there was a husband and wife missionary team who came to Boston, to my Rebbe, and eventually they became Jews. And they said, be trained as missionaries, they would memorize dialogues. Memorize, like, dialogues, back and forth, questions and answers. And if someone would ask them a question, or someone would make a statement, so they would respond with their part of the dialogue. And as long as the other guy, you know, played his role right, then they could answer back and forth. And if he sort of broke away, that was the end of it. You know, and then wait for the next one, but they could tune in with the dialogue. And it was just reciting these memorized dialogues. Yes, a friend of mine in Baltimore got hold of a missionary book of things to say to Jews. And one chapter, the first statement was, if you go into a house with Hebrew books, don't use the material in this chapter. What does that tell you? They know that the material in that chapter is lies. They know it's lies. And if in the house there are Hebrew books, then they'll know it's lies too, so don't use it. If you go into a house that doesn't have Hebrew books, then you can use the material in the chapter. This is what you're doing. One of the founding rabbis of this institution, Yaakov Rosenberg, one of Rachel, was at that Kressel. There was a Christian missionary over there preaching his stuff. So Rosenberg went up to him and said, yeah, that's because you picked the verses out of context. What are you going to say about Ezekiel 15:22? What about Isaiah 42:6? What about Jeremiah 15:33? So the missionary sort of just shuddered and walked away. So his students were there to give him this. I said, Rosenberg, how did you know? What are those verses? What do they say? Rosenberg said, I don't know. I made up the numbers. But, of course, that's what the missionary's doing. He's making it up. He's not serious. And he knows, they know that it doesn't work. So, anyway. All right, we'll continue tomorrow in the session.
Right. This morning we were told, like, nobody can, like,